You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet, and story is everything. We're your hosts, Jim and Bobby Bell.
And we're delighted to have you with us again week. That music that opens and closes our show is courtesy of the Hot Texas Swing Band and the writer Alex Dumont, the former leader of the band. And you know what? They have a whole new album coming out any day. We're so excited for them. And we're happy that you're with us. This is episode 70 of Rendezvous with the Writer. And you can catch all 69 episodes, including After Tonight's Show, number 70, on a variety of platforms right here at LA Talk Radio or our Facebook page, Rendezvous with a Writer, or Podbean or Spotify
or iHeart. We got all sorts of things you can find us, right?
Whatever your favorite.
YouTube.
Yeah, whatever your favorite.
Google up Rendezvous with a Writer.
You can get us anywhere you like to listen or watch great podcasts. Let's see, Jim, who's our special guest
special
tonight?
Special guest, Deborah Swanson.
And there she is.
Hey, Deborah.
Hi.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you.
She got two books we're going to talk about. Till My Last Breath.
Book one.
And Till My Last Day.
Book two.
They're part of the Desert Hills Trilogy.
Yes. And these have such striking covers, don't they? Gorgeous. Covers, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later. Jim, you read Till My Last Breath, which was book one.
I did read that.
And do you have an
all the way through
a reader's, you know, a reader's take on it?
I like the book. Interesting premise, you know. Now when we have cowboys, we go from, you know, from new times to old times.
To old times. And I read book two, Till My Last Day, and Deborah was kind enough to send us an advanced reader's PDF of it because it's not quite available yet. So I got to read in advance.
All right.
And I have to tell you, both of these books will totally engage you from the first sentence. And as I told Deborah recently in another meeting that we had together, she threw me at about page 38 or 39 when I said, where are we going? And then she threw me another loop just like 6 or 7 pages later. You will want to read both of these books. And we are already looking forward to book three, aren't we?
We are.
Yeah. So, Jim, you want to tell us a little something about Deborah?
Yeah, for our listeners and watchers, we have a short bio here. Deborah Swanson, an award-winning author, writes from an island in the Pacific Northwest. After an extensive and rewarding career in healthcare, she turned from writing technical articles and manuals to her love of writing Western historical fiction. When she's not writing, she enjoys clothing, spinning fiber, photography, reading, and traveling the back roads. Welcome, Deborah.
Thank you, Regina, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's fun to have you.
Okay, so there are two books, and we are going to talk about each book a little bit more in depth shortly. But in this little first time that we have together, we just kind of want to get to know Deborah
a little bit.
Yeah.
Right?
So
right.
Tell us, besides what we already just heard, Deborah, you want to tell us a little bit about maybe where you grew up or your writing background?
Well, I was born in New England and came out to the Northwest at a young age and have lived here my entire life. lived and worked and was educated in Seattle. And then 10 years ago, I decided I had had enough of the rat race and crazy traffic, and I moved up to the island, and I haven't looked back. It's been wonderful up here, so I just can't, you know, the views are fantastic, and I'm so close to even going back to town and the mountains, so it's a good life.
Yeah,
that's great. You spent a long career in the medical field, did you not?
I did. I had a very lengthy and very rewarding career as a registered nurse and then a nurse practitioner, and I specialized in high-risk obstetrics and thoroughly enjoyed that. And that opportunity led me to so many different venues. I was able to be on an editorial advisory board for a nurse practitioner magazine. I wrote a manual and nursing manual and published it on my own, self-published. And one of the physicians I worked with encouraged me to send it to her editor. They picked it up and published it. So I felt amazing with that. And that led me to be a contributing author to four other nursing textbooks. And I also did writing for Legal Nurse Consulting Magazine. And after I did those things, I decided I wanted to write something fun.
So okay.
That's what I did.
Your medical background does seem to inform both books a bit. Is it in the two books that we read, there are some medical situations that arise. Did you find that you had to go do additional research in order to? Okay.
You want yes, to? I did. I have some texts on antique medical instruments that I referred to. I researched old bookstores and libraries for techniques for the time period. Also researched the natural plants and herbs that were used during the time period. So that, and I learned a lot with that. It really, it research is something I enjoy. So,
Well, and it makes the books feel very authentic and real too. I think that you have that in the writing. So tell us a little bit about what's the inspiration. I'm going to hold up the book covers again. Just first off, just kind of for the series, because these are the first two books of the series. What was the inspiration behind the series?
Well, I loved watching Westerns with my dad. We had so much enjoyment with that on Saturdays and Sunday afternoons. And I used to read, he'd read his Louis L'Amour books, and then I'd take them and I'd read them. So I thought, it's just so much fun to be a part of writing that genre and that time period. So that's why I wanted to write Westerns. You know, people are asked me when they, what do you do? I say, I'm a writer. And what do you write? And I'll tell them Westerns, and they think, but you're a woman. And it's like, why can't I write a Western? So I just kind of, went with it, and I have thoroughly enjoyed it. So
do you have a question? I know you do.
We want to ask a little bit about the storyline. Okay, what's the book? The book's kind of all about. What's the first
and
book,
also
maybe?
The what year? What kind of what year and where? And where? Yeah. A little bit.
Well, the two main characters in book one, Till My Last Breath, Emily Sweeney, is a trauma physician in 2016, and she meets a tragic end and is transported to 1880 in Yuma, Arizona, and learns how to survive there. And then she struggles with, how do I get back to the 21st century? So that's a big part of that book. And then having her, you know, decide, does she really want to go back or does she want to stay? And then she meets Caleb Young, who was a prominent Boston attorney. And he left his lifestyle of leisure and became a gambler, wound up in Arizona, Yuma, and was wounded and dying. And that's how Emily and Caleb met. And the story goes from there.
And the story goes from there. So what is the time setting and location for Till My Last Day?
Well, that book starts two. With, pardon?
Book two.
Well, the two characters in that book were introduced at the end of book one. But it goes into much more detail. Rebecca Ackerman is young woman of Boston society who is married to what I will call a narcissistic husband. And she has two young boys. And one evening there is an event that changes her life and she decides to leave Boston for the safety and for her life. Now, she is also the sister of Caleb, who is one of the main characters in book one. So she hasn't heard from him in 5 years, doesn't know if he's even alive. But she gets a letter that heads her towards Yuma, Arizona. And the story is how she gets to Arizona and what happens to her when she gets there. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, traveling, she meets a gentleman who has been transported from 2019 Boston as a police officer, and he meets an unfortunate and timely end, and he's dropped into the 1880s, and he has to develop a new life, and they meet on the train, and I won't give the rest away.
Why don't you ask your time traveler? Yeah, he has a great time traveler question.
You know, it's a philosophical question that we started as we were talking before. I got to thinking, you know, I'm thinking because particularly I read the first book, Bobby has read the second book, and I'm sure Nathaniel had some problems with what happened to him. I know that Emily did. It was kind of tough, you know, getting acclimated to her new surroundings and what was it all about. And to some degree, it was a terrifying situation. And I got to thinking, you know, I wonder what it would be more terrifying, you know, going back in time for like the 104 years that she did, or going ahead if 104 years into the future. And I think, wow, what would be more terrifying?
Yeah, it's a good question. But, you know, for me, I think I would rather go back. Because it's, you know, instead of going forward where you have the unknown, going back at least we would know what transpired in history. So we would kind of be a little prepared for it. Not completely, but still.
I think Bob and I agree with that. I think I think we went forward 104 years ago. God, will we still be here?
Yeah.
And where if you knew something important like, oh, gold will be discovered such and such a place like 2 years from now, you know, you could know where to go to get ready for it.
That's right. Yeah. Or get ahead of it.
Get ahead of it. It is a fun thinking about time travel just always is such a fun because it just raises all kinds of questions. And it does really bring such an unexpected, even though we're talking about it, it's still, we're trying not to spoil for our readers what will happen, but it is an important part of the story and so engaging the way that you write it. We are right now, we're going to just take a very short break to tell you and show you where you can find Deborah's books as well as all of the featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer on our affiliate bookshop.org page. And when we come back, Deborah's going to read from book one. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shops Bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer with special guest Deborah Swenson. We're talking about her book right now, My Last Breath.
Book one. Oh my gosh.
That is book one.
Yes, that is book one. Yes, it is book one. And we would love to have you read a passage if you would. You want to set it up and go ahead and read it?
Happy to. This is chapter one, Until My Last Breath, December 1880, Arizona Territory, Caleb Young. I killed a man 4 days ago. Today, I find myself sitting precariously on a three-legged chair in a dilapidated cabin in the desert hills. With much to consider, all I have is a cold dinner of mushy pinto beans and dried smoked bacon. Surely not the high-class caliber of Boston restaurants I used to frequent. Scratching 4 days' growth of beard, I can't remember when my last home-cooked meal was. Closing my eyes and sniffing, I can almost smell a strong pot of black coffee brewing. Mm. I dared not light a fire in that ancient black stove, fearing it might explode. Plus, the smoke would lead them right to me. I had a bad feeling about the days ahead. Someone was out there looking for me. There always was after you killed someone. The sun, my only source of light, would soon set as I watched the fading rays of the hut desert orb paint the dirty cabin walls a dingy yellow. That man I shot surely had friends, maybe even family. No matter who they are, they'll come seeking revenge. It's just a stark reality in the West. Dwelling on it only makes it more real. In the fading light, I fingered the morning worn carvings of unfamiliar names etched into the top of the table, made smooth over the years from greasy hands. A rock-like sensation in the pit of my stomach prevailed as I dropped my dirty plate into the empty metal bucket that wouldn't hold water if I tried. Staring into its bottom, I laughed, thinking I resembled it, empty, dirty around the edges, and without hope of ever being whole again.
That's great.
If that didn't get you wanting to read the next page, that's the opening of Till My Last Breath. And you know, Jim, as she was reading that aloud, it reminded me of something we talked about the other day. Yeah. First person.
Yes.
Because both books, there's a lot of first person writing. Talk to us about why you chose to write in first person and how many first persons are there in book one.
Oh,
wow. You don't have to.
I'll have to count that one.
That's a trick. I didn't mean it.
Yeah. When I first wrote this, I sent it off to an editor and I got a very honest reply and said that I was doing a lot of head popping. So you'd be in one character's head and hearing what they were saying in the next paragraph, you'd be in another character's head and hear what they were saying. And they said it was just too confusing to follow the flow with each character. And I did some research on, you know, methods of how to write the characters out. And I chose to do first person, you know, with each character speaking through their own voice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's I've carried out through book two and will in three.
Let's talk about Caleb a minute. You know, what kind of guy is he? How do you see him?
Oh, wow. Strong, probably athletic looking, probably the cowboy of any woman's dreams. But I think he was very independent when he was in Boston, and he made some bad choices. He paid for them. And He felt almost disgraced, and that's why he left his life and his sister behind and chose to become a gambler and wound up in Arizona.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got to thinking, what would he be if we put him in a movie here? Who would play this character?
I think,
is this a John Wayne kind of guy? Is this a Sam Elliott kind of guy? You think?
That's a really hard one to say. I mean, all these, you know, life characters are coming to mind, and it's like I had one gal that read the book, and she likened him to Jack Reacher, and I went,
"We know Reacher, yeah.
Okay.
I could do that."
Yeah, that's always kind of a fun thing to think about. Even, you know, Emily, and who would you cast as, you know, as Emily? Fun things to consider.
It is.
Yeah.
Should we talk about Emily? You have another question?
I just wanted to just make a comment as a reader about first person. I find things written in first person are so very engaging. It just feels immediate. It feels like I'm right there. It doesn't matter what time period it's in. If it's written in first person, it just puts me right in the middle of the action. And, you know, as you read that aloud, Deborah, your description, all of your descriptive words, the way the water in the bucket or it wouldn't hold water, we can taste and touch and smell. Caleb has really good observation skills. And I think sometimes that's a challenge for a writer is to let us see something through the character's eyes instead of just giving it to us like a data dump kind of thing, mm-hmm. that we're actually seeing it as he is seeing it and as he's thinking about what he's seeing. And I find that through both of your books, the writing is so engaging. Mm-hmm. And I feel it's so immediate. That's why I don't go to bed, because I it's like, no, I want to know what happens next.
I like those kind of books too. And I think that's why I wrote that way, because I, you know, when I was writing, I was painting this picture in my mind and the video was going off. And it was, you know, sometimes at 2 a.m. in the morning, the characters would be knocking on my door, waking me up, going, okay,
you know,
what you did with me last night in the book, you know, writing, I don't want to be there, so let's go here.
We love to hear that.
I like that. Knocking on the door.
Characters living with you and giving you direction.
Well, they do, you know, and it's the only time you can say that you're talking to yourself and get away with it.
You wanted to talk about Caleb. Go. Was it Emily?
No, just a word or two about Emily. Emily. She's a very feisty individual.
Oh, she's a great
gal. She is. And I had a physician I worked with that was just like her. Very strong woman, smart, well-educated, knew what she wanted, went for it. And I don't want to say she was almost fearless, but... You know, in a men's world of medicine, you know, you have to be able to have some chutzpah and just go for it.
Right, right.
And that's what I think I tried to characterize Emily from.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think you achieved that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's she doesn't back down hardly from anything.
Yeah.
No.
I felt like fear, she's just a partner with it. She just recognizes, oh, that's fear on my shoulder. Yeah, I know that. I know what that is, and it's not going to stop me, and I'm, you know, just going to carry on. I would say most all the characters, the main characters in the two books, at least are good guys.
You know, I think
are without fear. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, quick. The bad guys, you can't treat them a little differently. You just call them all vermin. Like they're all rats, you know?
Vermin and Stubbs.
Yeah. Of the three guys, Stubbs is, I guess, the nicest one if you could be a nice bad guy.
If you could be a nice, villain.
Is it hard to write villains?
No, it really isn't. Like, you know, I kind of drew from my work experience.
There you go. Okay.
All right, we won't ask detailed questions about that. They could be your readers, you know.
Yeah. How true.
Well, I think that you have to, as an author, to make them real and authentic, you kind of have to like them, even if they're villains. You kind of have to find something humanity, something human about them in order to make them
in most cases
be...
That's true, but two of these guys, there is nothing good about them.
Okay, I've only read a little bit of book one, so now I know I have to go back and read all of book one. Book two, Elliot Ackerman is our really bad guy.
We'll talk
about him very shortly. Let's just see before we move on to our ad in book two. Mm-hmm. Is there another something else? Is there a character from book one you'd like to comment on that we didn't talk about?
I like Anders Johansson, the sheriff.
The sheriff, yeah, you did a nice job with him.
I liked him. I kind of pulled off my Swedish background for that. So, but he was a good guy. I mean, he was kind of that low-keyed, but don't rile him, you know, type of person. Don't get in his bad side. So,
a lion doesn't need to roar. That kind of
correct.
Guy.
Yeah.
Okay. We are having such a great time, Deborah. I was just delighted to be chatting with you. We're going to take another short break and hear from our sponsor, Out West Shop. And when we come back, Deborah is going to take us into book two, Till My Last Day. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. And here's a word from...
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer. Special guest, Deborah Swanson. We're talking about her two books here, Till My Last Breath and Till My Last Day. Part of a trilogy. Third book is coming.
I can't wait for the third book. Will you let us be advanced readers on the third book, Deborah?
I would love to.
Okay, we asked that important question.
You want to talk about storyline, or should we go right to the characters here?
She's going to read.
That's right. We get a passage in to read.
Now
that's right.
Deborah is going to read from Till My Last Day. Take it away.
Okay. So, Boston, Massachusetts, 1880, Rebecca Young Ackerman. I was terrified. Elliot was home making another of his late night entrances. As his careless disregard destroyed the portrait of wealth he so carefully meant to depict for Boston's high society. I gripped the arms of my chair as my fingernails dug deep into the fabric. I tried standing, but every muscle in my body stiffened. Was this a dream? No. The sound coming from the foyer was real. Motionless, I envisioned the gaping hole the door handle had left in the wall. The last thing I wanted tonight was to face my husband. Jaw clenched, I managed to push myself up. My feet were frozen in place as I anxiously waited for his usual acerbic outburst to commence. On other nights, I had persuaded him to go upstairs and sleep off the effects of the alcohol. But I sensed tonight I would not succeed. So I silently prayed that God would protect me and my boys from his wrath. Until the pain registered, I hadn't realized I'd been clenching and unclenching my hands. I held up my sweaty palms before my face and stared at the blood coming from the deep nail marks I'd created. I tried taking in several deep breaths to quiet my nerves, but it was futile. Standing in front of the fireplace, I stared at my reflection in the mirror above the mantel and shook my head from side to side, not recognizing the woman staring back at me. She was a pale figure whose vacant eyes emanated unimaginable anguish. all because of Elliot.
That's powerful.
This is the opening paragraph to Tell My Last Day, and it's the book that I sat down with as I've written in some of the promotions for tonight's show. I sat down with a cup of tea in front of a fireplace, all snuggled and thinking, oh, okay, this is, I'm going to be going on a, you know, some type of a ride. And oh my goodness.
It was.
No tea was drunk. what an engaging, just like with book one, what an engaging way to start to write. One of my questions for you, actually, since book one, we started with Caleb. And in book two, we start with Sister Rebecca. Mm-hmm. Did you know, when you sat down to begin to write Till My Last Day, did you know it was going to be Rebecca's story, first person? Or did you start somewhere else and then you rearranged things and said, no, I need to start with Rebecca? Tell us how you kind of got that all going.
No, I knew it was going to be Rebecca's story because I had introduced her at the end and at that time of book one, and she had the secrets of, you know, why she was there without her husband. So I wanted to, you know, continue that and tell her story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she's another, like Emily, she is
a tough lady.
And again, we're in the West. We're moving West. This one starts in 1880. So we're kind of further along in the Western story. These are not damsels in distress. They may have things going on in their life that are distressful, but these are women who will not be denied the life that they imagine and want. And she's a mom with two young boys, very protective. Mm-hmm. And you have to, I was just in love with her from the beginning, thinking mm-hmm. how she was surviving that marriage for as long as she did. And just the horror, always horrible, but it seems to be even more horrible when you put it sort of back in history, where it doesn't necessarily get as much written about it, also abuse, as we might see today in literature or in movies or, you know, dramas, like TV dramas. So I felt you were also somewhat fearless as a writer to decide that's the reason she's a West End woman. That's the reason she's going.
Mm-hmm. The women that I have as my, well, it's all my characters, they're strong women. They're resilient. They know what they want and they know how to survive no matter what the odds are thrown at them. And I knew I was taking a chance with the abuse that she was receiving from her husband and how to write that where it wouldn't be offensive or to some people or put them off from reading the book. But I think that, you know, I did it well enough, at least I hope I did, mm-hmm. where it would not only bring awareness to what's going on nowadays, but what women in that time period were going through because they didn't have the resources women have today. So,
mm-hmm. 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 And again, first person.
Yeah, she's married. Of course, her husband is Elliot. So obviously, Elliot is not very nice at all, right?
You do not like Elliot.
No, Elliot, I don't like Ackerman. Elliot either.
Ooh, he's the devil incarnate.
Yes, he is. Evil man.
Yeah. What was it like to write him?
Fun. It really was fun. Yeah. You know, I probably could have made her more evil, but you know, I kind of reined back on that one. But it was fun writing him. I knew I had to have a very strong evil character, and you know, being Rebecca's husband was the perfect one. So,
mm-hmm. And there's another, there are several other characters in this book we really liked. Well, you haven't read this book. Pearl. Yes. Tell us a little bit about Pearl's background and her part in the story.
I love Pearl. Pearl is actually taken off of my mother's best friend. She was a character. And she, no holds bar. She spoke what she wanted to say. There's no problems there. And she was a very feisty lady, but she was, like Pearl, very protective of the one she loved. And, so I just kind of based her off of that, and I had a lot of fun with her. It's going to be interesting in book three, where I'm going to take Pearl too.
Okay. Do you have a question?
And this Nathaniel, because he shows up at the end of book one, so yeah. He obviously is important, definitely an important character in book two.
Yes.
What's a little of his background Nathaniel. Without too much spoilers? Is he a good looking guy?
Oh, Nathaniel.
Nathaniel, come on. You like Nathaniel? Yeah. He's one that is part of the time travel. He is starts out as a police officer in Boston in the Roxbury neighborhood, which is not the best neighborhood in Boston.
Right, it is not.
Which you probably know. Yeah. And he unfortunately meets an untimely end and comes, gets time traveled back to 1880. But he has an encounter with Rebecca. And I just love that scene where they meet each other. And I had more fun writing that. And then there is kind of this, I love you. No, we can't be together. I love you. I mean, it was kind of like, overhead. I wanted to say, give it up, guys. But he was really fun to write. He has this soft, very sensitive and lovable side to him.
Yeah, he does. He does. The research for book two, you do take Rebecca across the country.
Yes.
And she leaves Boston in her, Yuma is the destination. Did you have to do some research on how all of the traveling part? Because there's a good bit of the book where we're traveling with her.
Yes.
You want to talk a little bit about that?
I did. I had to reach out to train people who are into trains, travel and associations, and they were very, very helpful. I had her go in one direction and they would tell me, nope, that's not, that wasn't happening back then. But I'd pull up maps doing research, and some of them were easy to read, some of them weren't. And occasionally there wasn't a much information to go from point A to point B. Mm. But I wanted to take Rebecca in a Pullman car. I love Pullman cars. And I knew that they didn't go all the way through, to Arizona, because train travel at that time wasn't really a big thing in the West past Fort Worth, Texas. So, I mean, I had to get her on a stagecoach, which was another, a journey in itself. Yeah. So, yeah, there was a lot of research, but it was fun.
Yeah. And it feels very authentic. It just, again, feels very real and very authentic. All of the scenes as she's traveling with the boys and with Pearl and the landscape and just the challenges of the travel.
I didn't read the book, but Bobby's talked about it. We talk about these things back and forth, even though we didn't read each other's book, so to speak. But I got a question about Rebecca. She decides to leave. Does she leave like in the middle of the night or something? Or how does she, is it an organized plan?
No, it's kind of like a mana from heaven. I mean, she gets a letter from out in Arizona, and it's an answer to her prayers.
It is.
Okay.
So she takes up that opportunity and she's I don't want to say, I don't want to give too much away.
Right.
But there are voices that come to speak to her from her past.
Yeah.
In both books. Yeah. And are telling her to, this is what you need to do, and you need to do it now to get away.
And she doesn't question it.
No.
She's just like, okay, I'm doing it.
We're gone. And we're out of here.
She puts it together very fast.
Good.
And it's really good. Do you want to take a moment? I'm just looking at time. Do you want to take a quick moment and tell us a little about the inspiration behind the time travel element?
Wow. It's, you know, how it came to me, I have no idea. I have no idea. This book started out in 2013 when I went to a Romance Writers of America conference, a local one. And one of the, a national author was there and challenged the group, the members, to write a book within 9 months. And I thought, I'll take that challenge. Mm-hmm. Never written a novel before, never, you know, fiction, although I was a voracious reader. And I came up to the island. It wasn't home at the time, but I came up to the island on a vacation. And in 2 weeks, I had the rough draft done. I just sat and typed it. And I thought, you know, how can I make this really interesting and pull people in instead of, you know, just, to me, you know, a plain mystery of you go from point A to point B and you find out, wind up at point A again. I needed to bring a little bit of intrigue to it. And that's where I came up with this Celtic gift. So it just came to me. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The first book, which is the one that's been out, we know we're waiting for the launch of the second book, has won some awards. Do you want to?
Oh, yes. You know, and I had to write those down because I can't remember them. So, but and there aren't that many. But let's see. A book one did the 2021. It was a SIBA finalist for the Laramie Book Awards for Best Americana and Western Fiction. And then it was the first place award for the Chatelaine category for Romantic Fiction. Then it won in 2022, the New Mexico Arizona Book Award. It was a finalist for Romantic Fiction. Mm. And it also won their first place for book cover.
Yeah.
Book cover.
Right. Such a great book cover. I'm just kind of looking at time a little bit. So do you get writer's block? And if you do, what do you do about it?
You know, I don't care for the term writer's block. I just, you know, when I'm writing, the characters will tell me, okay, stop, take a break, you know, walk away, you know, leave me for a day or two and then come back to me and then we'll talk some more. So, you know, I do have times where I've sat at the computer long enough and I have to go do something else, you know, so.
Yeah, it's like a writer's pause. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when do you write? Do you have a schedule or you just kind of do it when you,
you know,
thought occurs?
I try to write every day. My best time is early, early in the morning, like 5 a.m. to about 9 a.m. Mm-hmm. But having been to such a rigid schedule with work and being retired now, it's like, no.
Okay.
I don't want to go there. But I do try to write every single day. So.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Let's see. What's another? Oh, best investment you've made in your literary career.
I will say probably believing in myself, and that's an investment. You know, you have to invest in your time, in your energy. So I would say that's probably the best investment. You know, if you look at material things, probably a good computer, you know, having a good person that can maintain your website, most definitely. And one, I can say whether you're independently publishing or you're traditionally publishing, having a good publicist is really key. I know it's, you know, maybe an added expense, but, you know, to try to do all this alone, there's too much. There really is too much to keep up with.
Yeah. And it doesn't leave you really a lot of time to create. Yeah. It's like you have to be creating new product, or, you know, as much as you have to market it, you, your best time is, highest and best use of your time is in writing the next.
Right.
You know.
And I feel fortunate that I have, you know, a good website person with Mid-State, you know, web design and with Blue Cottage Agency.
Yeah.
I just can't thank them enough.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. They're wonderful. So tell us where our listeners and watchers can find you and follow you.
I am. My website is DeborahSwenson.com. And I am also on Facebook, and it's Deborah Swenson Author. I'm on Instagram. And those are the only two social medias that I do. It's like, it's too complicated to, there's too many things that you have to do and keep up with where that time is lost in writing. So,
right. And what's coming up next?
Book three.
Yeah. All right.
Yes. It's called I Love You the Best.
I love you the best. Oh, wow.
Yes.
Coming, number three. Ooh, and we're going to get to advance read it.
We are.
And, characters that I introduce at the end of book two will be the main characters in book three.
In book three.
Oh.
But all the previous characters will be continued. So we won't leave out Emily and Caleb.
Oh, okay. So Jim has a couple quotes. And we're kind of looking at our time. Jim, you have your quotes?
We do. All sorts of quotes here. You know, two of these quotes are obviously inspired by time travel. And one of them is directly also time travel, but directly from your book. The first one is H.G. Wells from his book, Time Machine. At first, things were very confusing. Everything was so entirely different from the world I had known, even the flowers. I kind of envision that as something that Emily was thinking about.
Right.
And then from a fellow by the name of an author, James Owen, that's the thing about travel, time travel. You're always moving forward, even when you're going back. Now, from Till My Last Day, book two, as stated, Nathaniel, when he first meets Rebecca, the sound of her laughter made my head spin. If only I could be the one to place a smile on her face each day and stare endlessly into the soulful eyes each morning. I would be the happiest man alive. Did her husband know how lucky he was?
Nathaniel on the train.
Yes.
Well, we want to thank you for being with us tonight, Deborah, and for everybody that's tuned in, either live tonight or will catch us down the road. Thank you to Sam Hassan of LA Talk Radio. Don't forget, you can hear all our interviews on your favorite podcast platform. Thank you to Alex Dormont and the Hot Texas Swing Band. Next week, our guest is, oh my goodness, it's an amazing mystery. He's a prolific writer. We cannot wait to talk with C.M. Wendell Bowe next week. And the book is Death Under the Deluge. And I don't have it to hold up to the camera because it's sitting next to my bed. Ooh, sorry about that.
Oh my goodness.
But we'll be talking about it next week. Jim, do you have a closing thought?
You know what we always say, it's always a great day out west.
Keep writing. We'll keep reading, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.